You're listening to The Head Trash Show with the founder of Head Trash, Alexia Leachman. Head Trash is the home to the new and unique Head Trash Clearance Method that removes unwanted negative thoughts, feelings, and emotions quickly and effectively so that you can achieve clarity, confidence, and contentment in your life. Tune in every week as Alexia shares insights and simple strategies to help you create some headspace to experience confidence and clarity in your life and business. To find out how to clear your head trash quickly and effectively using our unique method, pop over to www.headtrash.co.uk to get our free download and subscribe for our free head trash clearance updates. And now for the show.
Hello and welcome back to the Head Trash Show. This is me, your host, Alexia Leachman. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, today's show is for those people that are trying to turn their life around. Maybe your life just feels a little bit sucky right now. Maybe you're in a bit of a deep hole and you're wondering how on earth you're going to get yourself out. But it doesn't actually have to be that bad. Maybe you just need to crank things up a level. Well, I'm going to help you. Today, I've got a guest on the show who's going to share tons of advice, tips, techniques, attitudes, wisdom, all that good stuff to help you to turn your life around. Or if what you're trying to do is crank things up a level, then what she's going to share with you will definitely do that too. Today, I'm speaking to Tanya Mann Rennick. And Tanya is an inspirational speaker, but she's also the founder and owner of the Oyster Club Networking Club, which is a London-based networking organisation. And she is pretty formidable, let me tell you. She has spoken at the Houses of Parliament. She's been to the EU to speak. I mean, she really has got quite a colourful life. But she's put the whole London thing on hold and she's escaped the country to live this dream life in deepest, darkest Cornwall. So this will explain a little bit the sound quality that we have on today's show, because I don't think they've got very good internet down there, it has to be said. But hopefully you will not worry too much about that listening to the audio, because what Tanya's got to share with us today is just fantastic. She has something that she calls the STAR principle, which is basically five things that can really help you if you apply them in your life to really start turning things around. And she's going to be sharing her STAR principles with us on today's podcast. It's a bit longer than usual on today's episode, but you know, when she's sharing so much good stuff, I really didn't want to stop her in her tracks. She's got such energy, such great stuff to share, that really I wanted you to have and hear all of it. So without further ado, this is when I spoke to Tanya Mann Rennick all about how you can turn your life around using the STAR principles. Thank you, Tanya, for joining me on the Head Trash Show.
Thank you for having me, Alexia. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I've got Tanya Mann Rennick here on the show today. And Tanya is the founder of the Oyster Club. And also she is a motivational speaker who speaks about the STAR principle, which is all about a guide to illuminated living and how to step into your spotlight and shine like a star. So thank you so much, Tanya, for joining me on the show today.
You're very welcome. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Well, the one thing I really can't wait for you to share is the steps in your STAR principle, because there's some really great tools and techniques there that you share to help people to be much happier in their lives. But before we dive into that, would you mind just sort of telling us a little bit about how you got to do what you do and a little bit about your story? Like, who are you, Tanya?
Who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I and where'd you come from?
Yeah.
Okay, so who I am, I didn't know who I was, and that's the starting point. I was in a marriage, I was a full-time mum, I also worked part-time in a small property company, and I felt that life wasn't really that thrilling. You know, I can't say I was deeply unhappy, but I certainly wasn't incredibly juiced up and full of enthusiasm and loving life. It just felt like a slog. That's how I felt, this continuous apathy, this just life is not really that great and I don't know how to make it better. And that was my starting point. And one day I walked into my kitchen and I thought, this has got to stop. I need to live. I need to actually live a vibrant and full life. I feel like I'm just existing. I reckon people would say it was a midlife crisis. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it was. Maybe it was a slightly premature midlife crisis. But nonetheless, it was a crisis. It was an epiphany. It was a wake-up moment. It was this absolute watershed moment of it's got to start now. Life has to start. So the first thing that happened was I had to get unmarried, because... it was a real wrestle with my conscience. I had to finally get to the point where I realised I was unhappy and I needed to be brave enough to break out of that and, you know, deal with the guilt towards my children and to the feeling of a failure. You know, when a marriage doesn't work out, we feel like failures as women because we feel like we can fix everything. But that was the first thing. And then an enormous amount of personal development, of soul searching, of reading, of attending courses to really get to the nub of it. Because I just felt so kind of insignificant and useless and that, you know, that there had to be something more than that.
Mm.
And... in the process, I realised that I also needed to generate income.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. So the first thing that I did was I tried to boost up a small business that didn't feel right, didn't sit particularly well with me. However, one of the things I did was I went out networking to try to meet new people and just get myself on the map. And the process of networking really appealed to me. I loved getting out and meeting people. I loved the fact that, you know, I could walk into a room and in that room would be one or two amazing new contacts, people who were driven and fun to be around. And these were the people who I wanted to surround myself with. And that was became one of the principles, one of the star principles, this alignment of being around people who really lift you up. And so I started a networking group all of my own because the kind of groups I went to didn't exactly cater to what I wanted to get out of a meeting, which was a little bit of glamour, a little bit of luxury, and fun, and to not necessarily have too many sales attempts shoved down my neck when I went out and business cards thrusted at me willy-nilly. I just wanted to go out and meet cool people. So the Oyster Club began, and before I knew it, people were asking me how I did it, how I built something without any previous contacts or any previous knowledge of running a business like that or any investment. Because usually you need at least one or two of those things to get something off the ground. Mm. You're at quite a disadvantage if you go in like me. And believe me, I hadn't even opened a computer until about 4 or 5 years ago.
Wow.
Or maybe five. Yeah. So this was a massive learning curve, but it finally felt like I was alive. It felt like I was, you know, learning new things every day and being really inspired by people around me. And it was incredible to realize that there are, when you reach out, there are like-minded people. You will always meet those people and become a magnet to them if you just simply honor your truth. And if you live authentically, then those people will come to you. Mm. They just will. And so people started asking me to explain the positivity. Did you hear that buzz? I'm so sorry. So I was increasingly asked how I remained positive, because I did go through quite an unpleasant breakdown of my marriage and subsequent divorce, and things were quite rough for me. I lost my home. Everything just fell through, and everything felt like I was in free fall, and things were very difficult for me for quite an extended period of time. When we were talking privately before the interview, I told you about my daughter had a car accident. She nearly lost her life. All these things were happening at the same time. It's very easy to say to yourself, my destiny is to always struggle, you know. And here's another part of the star principle is, if we keep telling ourselves these things, then that's what we believe. So after a while, the question was constantly asked of me, how do you stay on top? What is the secret to your positivity? How come when you walk into a room, everybody knows? What is that thing?
Yeah.
I realized that there were certain principles that work each and every time. And they are your understanding your story. So this is about accepting who you are. Mm. Who you are and what your past is, and to be not to be ashamed of your story, because that is what has made you. You know, we never know. There was a wonderful saying, and I can't remember who said it. I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt. So Eleanor Roosevelt said, women are like tea bags. You don't know how strong they are until they're in hot water.
Mm, it's a good one, that.
It's wonderful, because you really don't know how tough and how strong you are until you are absolutely up against it. Mm. And the whole thing about your story is that people constantly make excuses for their past, or try to cover up their past in some way, or skirt around it. Actually, be proud of who you are. I do not have an alphabet after my name. I know people who have got letters and qualifications and come to the table with, this is my experience, this is why I'm an authority. And I come to the table saying, I knew nothing. And if I can do it, then anyone can. The key is masterminding, getting the right people around you. But that's, I'll talk more about that later. So story is about understanding your past and really accepting it and loving who you are, because you have come through whatever your personal journey is. You have learned things along the way. So what I help people with is actually going back and exploring that and seeing where all the value is in that. And story is in three parts. You have your past, but equally you have your future. And it's really important to know what you want from your future, not in a really kind of heavily prescriptive future way. I know I want, you know, X thousand pounds in the bank, or I want, you know, a house of a certain square footage. All that's rubbish. What you want from your future is to know really spiritually what your destiny is. What will make you feel happy? And if it is acquiring material things, then fine, no one's going to judge you for it. But don't reserve happiness until you've achieved those things, whether that is material or whether it is through a relationship. Or, you know, people say they're not going to be happy until they've got their house, or they've found the right partner, or they've got rid of the partner, you know, or they've had kids, or their kids leave home. That's when they can be happy. Or they've retired. You know, this reserving your happiness until is a recipe for permanent dissatisfaction, because there'll always be another thing that you're going to wait for at that point. Yeah. We have to learn to accept our here and now as the most perfect point in time, mm-hmm. and to be happy in our right now, in our nowness. Yeah. And so when we're really, really comfortable with our past, and we know what we want from our future, but we are definitely heading towards it, that's when we can be happy and we can really sit in that moment thinking, okay, this is fine, this is totally fine. Very, very liberating feeling to experience. Mm-hmm. And then there is tenacity. And you know, I've noticed, I've studied successful people. I've had an opportunity to get really close up to some amazing successful people. The thing is, with the people I know, the people I'm close to, and the people who I don't know, is they all have commonalities. And one of the major things is they are all tenacious. They never, ever give up. They never feel that they're at a point where it's okay to stop. So if you look at some really successful people like Oprah Winfrey,
right,
just because she has an incredible career this far hasn't stopped her from then going and acting in movies. You know, or reading and reviewing books or writing things. She is still as active and as prolific as ever. You look at someone like J.K. Rowling. She really didn't need to pick up another proverbial pen, did she?
No.
After Harry Potter. All she needed to do was to just sit back in her castle. And yet she's gone on to write more, because those people who are driven. Richard Branson, he's another one. He doesn't need to do another single thing for the rest of his life, but tenacious people, successful people, continue and continue because they get a buzz from what they do. So I guess if you love doing what you're doing, it's never like work.
Yeah.
So there is never a time where you think to yourself, I want to stop. Of course, there's balance. There's got to be a life balance. And all those people take plenty of time out, take time to spend with their families and with their loved ones, and time on themselves, because otherwise you'd be running yourself ragged. But they never, ever stop going forward, learning, growing, achieving. And so tenacity is this huge piece in the STAR principle. And one of the things that I look at very closely is what stops you from being tenacious? Because it's all very well to say, oh, I've got to be tenacious today, right? But, you know, we suffer from this thing called drag, that I call it drag, and it's that not feeling that you are streamlined and moving forward. It's this apathy piece. And apathy is, for me, the opposite of tenacity, because when you don't care, you lose your passion.
Yeah.
And tenacity is all about passion and driving forward, yeah?
Yeah.
So apathy is about this not caring, this not getting things done. And there are certain things that create more apathy in your life, and these things are toxins. So we've got the obvious toxins, like overuse of stimulants. Obviously, drugs are a no-no, but things like caffeine, you know, overuse of it. Too much alcohol in the system. Too much junk food in the system, too much sedentary lifestyle. So getting out and about, getting enough exercise in, getting a healthy diet, fresh food, lots of water, all those things help you buzz because you're full of health and vitality. But one of the biggest toxins that we have is the company we keep. So this is about, you know, that person who phones you and your face drops when the phone rings and you just think that person is going to hoover up my mood.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to then get to a point where we say to ourselves, well, you know, often people will say to me, but that would be callous if I ended that friendship. Who are you being the most callous to?
Yeah.
What about yourself? Who, when you love yourself the most, then you finally can guilt-free yourself from the people around you who are bringing you down.
Yeah.
And whether they are friends or, you know, a partner or someone in your business, you can, if you can't get rid of them completely, then you have to reduce the effect they have on you. And there are techniques for sort of creating an almost like Teflon-like aura where things they say don't affect you anymore, because we absorb all this stuff and we get so negative because there's, you know, there's always that person who tells you can't do something. They think they're being a reality check. No, they're not.
Yeah.
That's their stuff, it's not yours. So when we finally allow ourselves to love ourselves more than anybody else around us, I mean, obviously our children, you know, that goes without saying, yeah. But when we put ourselves right at the top of the tree and we say, I only want the good people around me, amazing things happen. Magical things happen. So this is a massive part of creating absolute tenacity in life, is this refusal to allow toxic people in. And it is so huge and it's so life-changing and it makes such an amazing impact on positivity. And the last piece in that is there is one more toxin that is even worse than the company you keep. And I know we've had this conversation before, because this is what you talk about, right, with head trash. This is the biggest toxin, is that negative voice in your head.
Yeah.
That voice can single-handedly take you down. And we have to get control of it. So what we do is we practice positivity. So there are two voices in your head, and that's for the normal people, not for the mental people. There are two voices in your head. We are born with them. We need them. We need the voice to say, oh, I want to go and smell the flowers and explore and delight and da-da-da. And then there's the other voice that says, don't climb to the edge of the table, you're going to fall off. We need it because we don't want to fall off the edge of the table or whatever it is. So we have to have the positive and negative, right? So we have these two voices in our head, and they start off being quite equal in size. Imagine they're like plasticine people.
Yeah.
And they're equal in size. The size of them is directly related to the volume of their chatter in your head. And this is really important. What happens is, as we grow up, people, it could be our mothers, it could be our teachers, it could be friends, tell us we can't do things, or we're no good at something, or we better not do that, we might fall over, or we better not do that, it will fail. Every time we do that, our negative little plasticine person, it takes a little piece of plasticine from our positive little person in our head, our PIV, our positive inner voice, and it rolls up into a ball, and then it reconfigures into this larger person, and this larger person is now much more chatty in your head and telling you, no, you look really stupid doing that. No, your hair looks rubbish today. Don't go out wearing that. What will people think? You know, don't go and tell people you're a such and such. They'll never believe you. Don't be ridiculous. You need qualifications to do that. You know that chatter?
Yeah.
Can you hear it? You know you can hear it. And this is the thing. We can't take that voice away because it lives in your head. You would need sort of, you know, a frontal lobotomy. You'd need something to get rid of it, and we don't want to be that extreme. The only thing we can do is to grow the positive. And when we grow the positive, the negative has no room. It can't be heard because the positive voice drowns it out. The volume is so loud, you can no longer hear the negative little voice. It still has to be there to protect us, but it's going to get really tiny. Mm. And the only way we grow this is by practicing our affirmations on a daily basis.
Okay.
Positive affirmations said in the present. They have to be said in the present.
So what are your affirmations? What are some of yours?
I am a warrior woman. I am strong. I am powerful. I am a lover. I am a friend. I have vitality. Oh gosh, I've got loads.
So when you say, you know, this building up the positivity, and affirmations was one of the main tools, what other tools have you got that help people to build up the... I like this idea of a positive plastic man in your head.
Oh, like, I almost like a plastic man. In fact,
like love... Morph. Did you watch Morph? When...
Yes, it's exactly like Morph. In my head, it's like Morph. So okay. I've got two little plasticine men and they sit on my desk and I look at them every day and I remember that all it is two little people in my head. It's nothing but voices.
Yeah.
These are paper tigers. These are not real. This is under my control.
Yeah.
So I when I do the affirmations, I remember I'm the one in control. This is my destiny. This is my life. I can choose. I choose. One of the things I always say is I choose. When I open my eyes first thing in the morning, I'm choosing to open them. Nobody's doing it for me. So it's taking back some control. So some of the other things is there are also incantations, and they're very similar to affirmations. People often get confused by what's the difference. For me, incantations are ritualistic. They're much more meditative. They take you into sort of a transcendental space where you rhythmically repeat the same thing, almost like a mantra.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I do to really anchor these things is I get some motion going while I'm repeating them. So you can do it when you do laps in a swimming pool. It's a really great time to do it because it's really you are at one with yourself. You can do it when you go for a walk. You can do it anywhere you like when you're, you know, the thing about these things is once you train yourself, you can do it while you're waiting for the pasta to boil. Yeah. I mean, these things need to be incorporated into our daily life because the mistake that most people make is they think, right, on a Monday, I'm going to set aside half an hour to do this thing. Then Monday comes and all the emails come in and the overwhelm, and you never get to do the thing that you're supposed to do. No, what you have to do is before you're even out that bed, you switch on, you wake up, and then go into a meditation and you say some things to yourself so that by the time you've even stepped out that bed, you are in a positive mindset. And then while you're going about the humdrum stuff that you have to do, the taking of the shower, brushing your teeth, look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself how fantastic you are, how amazing you are. And when you first do it, you feel so uncomfortable because you feel like, who am I to say that to myself? Oh my goodness, if you can't love yourself that much, who else is going to do it? So this is absolute 100% self-love, total positivity, not negotiable.
So when you talked earlier about this real need to self-love and you link tenacity into that as well, were you somebody that self-loved from the start, or how did you, and if you weren't, how did you get to that? Was it literally from telling yourself how gorgeous you were when in the shower? Is that kind of sticking with that one, or
was it anything?
Was there anything else that you kind of? How did you overcome that one? Because it's a real biggie, this one, for people. This self-love piece, it's massive.
Yeah, my self-esteem was the lowest it could possibly be for a human being. I would say much lower, and I would have needed medical assistance. So I have come from the depths of despair. I had some very unpleasant things happen to me in my youth that made me have a great disrespect for my own life and my own health. And by the time I was a teenager, I was very involved with drugs. I took lots of drugs. I used alcohol. I was in a very bad way. And by the time I was 21, I ended up in a relationship with an extremely violent man. And so I without going into that into too much detail, my self-esteem levels were as low as you could possibly get. And I then, my subsequent marriage, some years later, was, to me, I did love him. I'm not saying I didn't. And he's a very nice person. We just not, you know, it just didn't work. But one of the attractions to the marriage was that I convinced myself a life of conventionality was the key to happiness, because I still didn't know how to be happy. I didn't know how to self-love. I didn't even know such a thing existed. Mm. I thought that if you ticked all the boxes, that would equate to happiness, because I had been fed, you know, since childhood, that the ideal life is Little House on the Prairie or the Brady Bunch or, you know, all these shows that we watched as kids, right? And they all revolved around the perfect relationship and really cute kids, and you'd have this really interactive relationship where you talked a lot and nice things happened. And it didn't work out like that for me. It just didn't. And I have learned to accept that my life is slightly unconventional. I'm, you know, I am a speaker and I travel a lot to give my talks. And that is my happiness. Mm. You know, it's different for everyone. For some people, they're happy in a certain lifestyle, and for others, it would absolutely be their worst nightmare. Mm. I mean, for years, I was so shy that I couldn't even stand up and give, you know, like you have to give that elevator pitch when you go networking.
Yeah.
I used to shake into the balls of my feet, up my body, into the tip of my head, into my fingertips. I shook everywhere. And all I had to do was describe what I did for a minute. And it was because I wasn't happy.
So how on earth did you get to, when you're saying you can't stand up and talk about yourself, and now you're a speaker, and, you know, how did you turn that around?
Ah, we're on to the next principle, the principle of audacity, my darling. So the principle of audacity is that there are different areas where you can be more audacious in your life. So that is increasing your confidence, your courage, and your charisma. And those are the things that really go towards boosting this incredible positivity that makes you shine like a star. And so what happened was, there I was, incredibly shy, incredibly nervous about speaking in front of people. And I was at a networking event, a Christmas lunch, where we all had to buy raffle tickets. And the prize was, you know, there were some bottles of wine on a piano at the end of the restaurant. And there were about 40 people in the room. And we all bought our tickets and settled down to lunch. And through the entire lunch, I sat worrying about my ticket being pulled, because if it did, it meant I would have to traverse this room and collect the bottle of wine. So the entire lunch was spoiled by my fretting about this. And then the raffle was done, and of course, whose ticket was pulled? Mine. And I could not believe that my ticket had been pulled out. My world just dropped. And I had to go and collect this wine. And crossing the room felt like I was wading through treacle. It felt like it was an eternity to get there, to shake the prize giver's hand and to get this bottle of wine. And I could feel my face flushing, the inside of my cheeks burning. You know, just before you vomit, that feeling. Yeah. I could feel all the prickles across my chest. My palms were sweaty. It was just awful. And I got back and I sat down with this bottle of wine and I took it home and I opened it. And Alexia, I drank the whole lot. And I sat there thinking that everything I wanted was being delayed, was being prevented by this fear, by this shyness, by this absolute inability to control myself, and that I was never going to achieve anything unless I hit that wall and climbed over it. And I am not saying it's an overnight process, but what I am saying is that when you finally realize that what you want is more important than the fear itself, you will start to conquer and deal with that fear. And so I worked on it. I realized that, you know, everybody has their own set of little quirks and idiosyncrasies. We've all got them. And that actually, at that point, as far as I was concerned, I was almost at rock bottom. I had nothing left to lose and a whole lot to gain. And so when I work with people on really dealing with this, on dealing with shyness, and especially when it comes to presenting in front of people, I talk about what the benefit is. You know, you have to look at, well, what have you got to gain by actually dealing with this thing?
Yeah.
And equally, what's going to happen if you don't?
Yeah.
And so that's the whole courage and the confidence thing. And charisma is about, wow, remembering that we're playful human beings, to put the fun and the charm back into life. You know, that people who are incredibly successful tend to have charisma in bucket loads, even if they are particularly unattractive. And I can think of certain charismatic figures in the public eye who, if you took them away from their success story and you just stuck them in a local pub, you would look at them and think, this is not a particularly attractive person, but the charisma just exudes from them from every pore, because what it's saying is, I'm interesting.
Yeah.
I'm successful. I'm a magnet. I you want to talk to me. I'm going to be fun. And so for us at, you know, normal human being level, what we need to do is to remember that life isn't that serious. And whether you're going through a horrendous time or an okay time, it'll be 10 times better if you actually add a scoop of playfulness into it.
Yeah.
So this is about making yourself look and feel the best you can. So again, it's addressing your personal hygiene, your, you know, your level of fitness, your willingness to kind of put on your best outfit, not save that for a rainy day, you know, get your hair sorted out, you know, if you're a man, be well groomed. And I suppose that's the same for women too. It is that kind of confidence that you get from grooming that you just, it makes you stand more erect. It makes you, it makes people respect you more. So if you turn up for a meeting and you're late and you look a bit slovenly, and your shoes are a bit of a mess, and you know, you got chewed fingernails, and I don't know, if you're a man, you haven't shaved properly or whatever it is. You just don't look as cool as the person who's actually made a bit of an effort. And that isn't to say that we've all got to adopt a very corporate look, because, you know, if that's not congruent with who you are, then fine. But even if you're a fairly laid back person, you really need to address how you look, because it really affects how you feel.
Yeah. And that goes back to self-love.
Yes, and it does go back to self-love, because any time I've ever been, you know, dealing with a downward spiral, I look back on those days and I remember those were the days where I perhaps didn't bother to get dressed properly, where I may have, you know, it was a pajama day. I kidded myself that that's what I wanted to do. But actually, the best thing you can do on one of those downy days is throw some jeans on, get yourself outside and take a power walk for about half an hour and get the juice flowing around your body, and it will lift your mindset. Mm. So it really is. I mean, that, you know, why would you want to slope around feeling anything less than good about yourself? I mean, I know today we're at home and so we're not, you know, madly dressed up. But I'm telling you, both you and I could be up and ready to go in 20 minutes, couldn't
oh,
we?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I've been out for that power walk already. Pushing right. Quite a heavy pram, I have to say.
There you go. So that's audacity piece. That's all about lifting up those levels of confidence, because it doesn't matter how amazing and creative your dream entrepreneurial endeavor is, or your desire for a better personal life, or your wish to sort of overcome any barriers. If you cannot get that audacity piece in place, it will remain a dream. Because what we need is the confidence to ask for help. And whether that's asking ourselves for help, or whether it's the confidence to ask people around us for help. And I'm not saying, you know, give me, give me, give me. There's often an exchange when help takes place, like you and I shared knowledge, you know. And so this is a way of being confident enough to say, can you help me with such and such? I don't know about it. Rather than either pretending that you know it because you're embarrassed and ashamed to admit that you don't, you know, or lacking the confidence to actually ask the question for whatever reason in the first place. Confidence is something that if you don't address that, you can never take anything further from an internal thought. The only way to externalize it and to make it happen is that confidence piece.
So what do you think has been the main thing that's helped to boost your confidence then? What's been, how have you kind of addressed that in yourself?
Well, I would say that social media has been an incredible journey for me. I came from a place where I didn't know anyone particularly. I mean, yes, I had friends, but, you know, I was in suburbia and I wasn't really connecting with people on a wider level or on a deeper level, because those people didn't really get me. What happened with social media is it allowed me to express myself, to have a voice. Even before I had conquered the shyness piece, I was able to actually go online and talk about thoughts and feelings and realize that I was not alone, and that actually what I was saying people really liked, and that grew my confidence. The more you get out and do what you believe in, the greater the confidence levels. And there is nothing for me more satisfying, more boosting, more energizing than getting out on a platform and speaking. And that boosts my confidence levels because, you know, when I can see that people appreciate what I'm saying, well, how could it do anything else?
You know? So what other, like, you hinted at the beginning about some other, like, techniques or some tools that you use regularly, and you mentioned affirmations and incantations and the power walk, which is a really simple but obvious one. Yeah. What else do you use to help you to, you know, stay in this hugely positive place and to turn things around when you need them to?
Oh, okay. My gratitude journal. So, okay, a gratitude journal is not just a plain diary. It's a very specific tool to increase positivity. I personally love my, I have a moleskin because I think that what you need to do when you choose your gratitude journal is get something that you love to look at and you love to use, because this is going to be a treasure for you. So go to your local stationers or go online and pick something that really appeals to you, that you're going to use and you're going to love, and get your favorite pen. For me, I use a propelling pencil because I get a real buzz from the feeling of a pencil on paper. I know it's really weird, but that's my thing. And every day, look for the positives and write in your gratitude journal. Now, I tend to write something that I'm physically grateful for, something that I'm mentally grateful for. So it could be, I'm really grateful because if it rained, I could be grateful. Let's make it really simple so that the principle is clear. If it rains, I could say, I'm so grateful for the amazing umbrella. It kept me dry.
Yeah.
I mean, how gorgeous. Umbrella. Umbrellas are just brilliant. And then if it was something else, I could say, I waited for the bus in the rain and it was cancelled, or the train or whatever. But I met someone really great on the platform and we had this really great conversation and we connected and we had a really good time, and it was really good to meet someone, and I made them feel good. I made them feel that the time passed quickly. The extra 20 minutes or 30 minutes for the next train was a pleasure because we were in conversation. So it could be, I normally say, tell myself that I'm grateful for my liver because that keeps processing away.
All these toxins.
And, you know, obviously there are the obvious things like your family you could be grateful for, the roof over your head, the food on your table. There are just gazillions of things. But what we do when we practice gratitude and we try to write as much as we can about that, so it could be a whole stream of consciousness. You might be tired and only want to just write a list. You might do something in between those two things. But what you do is you are telling your brain to look for things to be grateful for on a daily basis. Mm. Because you know that you're going to be writing in your gratitude journal the next time. So whether you write in the morning or write in the evening or do both, you're constantly looking for the positives, not the negatives. Mm. So while I have nothing against journaling per se, often it can be a whine. Often it's, you know, this thing happened, it's your innermost feelings. And often the innermost feelings are, you know, this thing didn't go right, that thing didn't go right. No, chuck all that out and just write what you're grateful for.
Yeah.
Because that is reality. Because there's an argument of, well, it's not real because maybe, you know, I don't know, the roof crashed in on one side of your house. And then you could write, oh, I'm really grateful I'm insured. You know, I don't know, but it might sound trite, but it's controlling your mind.
Yeah.
and you are going to make a switch where actually you are the one in control.
Yeah.
So you bring that back and that control thing. So that brings me on to the fourth principle, which is rightness. Because it is about this this choice thing in your head. Because everything that we do is about choice. Rightness is about making the right decision for you according to your own moral compass and no one else's. So what's right for me might not be right for you. Mm. Right? So I know that if I step outside my moral compass, I feel uncomfortable. So it might be that I would never park in a mother and child parking space, or forget about my recycling, or some of those things that for me is absolutely, no, you can't do that. That's a wrong thing to do. Whereas for someone else, it might not be particularly relevant for them. Mm. And I am not saying that there is a hard and fast list of things that are right and things that are wrong. We've all got our own moral code. And we have to stick to our own moral code, whatever that may be. Now, it may be looking at the bigger picture. What do you want to leave as a legacy? What are you doing for your family for the future? What are you building? Mm. Are you, if you are, you know, fairly successful, are you helping anyone along their journey? What are you giving back? All those things. And the rightness piece is also about how are you constantly learning and bettering yourself in every way you can? So in whatever field you're in, do you make sure you are the expert in your field so that you're giving your clients the best that they can receive? Mm. And this is honoring the people around you. For me, if I'm going to stand up and speak, I am going to practice and practice and practice so that when I get up, I'm honoring the people who have taken the time to come and see me, that I'm going to give them the best talk I can possibly give them so that they leave after, you know, however long the keynote is, thinking, I've just had the best, right? Not, oh, she was all right. No, we want to be the best constantly. Rightness is not about having the moral high ground. That's a big difference. So this isn't about telling other people how to do things.
Yeah.
In fact, this is about not doing that at all. You, as long as you are comfortable with yourself, because when you put your head on the pillow at night, only you are going to sleep with you. Even if you've got someone sitting next to you, lying next to you, whatever, you know, you are in control of you.
Yeah.
So, rightness is that sense of living the best life you possibly can and forgiving yourself for anything where you have not. Mm. Because perhaps up until this point, you haven't. And perhaps this is a new concept and you may wobble. We all wobble. That's okay. We have to forgive ourselves. It is just following this code that you call your own, that you decide these are your standards. This is the way you're going to live your life. This is what feels absolutely right. I mean, for me, my biggest thing is the not gossiping. You know, that I step away from anyone who is gossiping. I don't want to hear what they've got to say. I'm not particularly interested. And I don't repeat things. Mm. And as soon as, you know, when I was younger, I didn't realize how damaging and harmful that was. And I did, because we all do it as kids. And then one day I realized that this was perpetuating absolute misery. And that by just actually saying, no, I'm not doing that, it freed me. It totally freed me. And so everyone's got needs to spend some time having a think about mindfulness, how they're living their life, how they're actually being the best they can be, and how that impacts on other people, and what they've decided they will do from now on. Mm-hmm. And that's rightness.
So is that the star? Is that all of the star principle then? Is that
my love, there is one more.
There's one more.
My star has two R's.
Okay.
It's star.
I love that because our favourite technique here is reflective replatterning. So we love a double R. So this is perfect.
We are just, you know, you're my sister. Hey, sister. So this is the bonus R.
Give it to me, honey. Okay.
So we've had story, we've had tenacity, we've had audacity, rightness. And lastly, but not by any means least, we have right now-ness.
Oh.
Oh, yes. The action piece. Yeah. Because what happens is we have this kind of inertia where we stop and we don't do the things we know we ought to do. And it doesn't matter how much perfecting you've done. And this is slightly at odds with rightness, because here I am saying to you, you've got to be the best you can be. You've got to make, you know, make every effort to deliver at your highest level. But that doesn't stop you from getting on with it, you see. Because if you imagine a bicycle, as fabulous as a bicycle is, it doesn't do anything until you get on and pedal. Right. So when you first pedal, even if you are a brilliant cyclist, if you were to video it and slow it down, there is a wobble before it goes into a straight line. True?
Yeah.
So what we have to do is say, I'm going to start this now.
Yeah.
Now, whatever it is, whatever is bugging you or needs to be done or needs to be addressed as a result of listening to what I have to say here, there is no point in listening to this and thinking, I'll give it some thought. Oh, no. No, 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 no. It's got to be done now. Right now-ness. That action, that absolute, just get on with it. Just make it happen. Just do the thing that you need to do now.
Yeah.
And when you think about people like Bob Geldof and his, so there he was, and he was watching the horrible, horrible, harrowing report by Michael Burke of the starvation in Ethiopia, and he didn't sit there thinking, "I'm going to do a course in fundraising. I'm going to read some books. I'm going to go on an evening class." No, he didn't do that. He just went, oh, my God, and stronger words, knowing him, something's got to be done now, right now. Mm-hmm. And so he got on the phone to Midge Ure, and he did, terrible name, and he got on the phone to him and he said, right, we've got to just do something. And they wrote, Do They Know It's Christmas? And that's impacted the entire world. It's had a ripple effect for what years, nearly, gosh, it was the 80s, I don't even know now. But what happened was it wasn't just the fact that he wrote the song and got it out and got all the pop stars to go and record it, and then they sold it. That then went on to Live Aid. Did he, when it got to Live Aid, think, well, I don't really know how to be a fundraiser from a stage? I mean, I can remember, because I was a teenager when that was on, watching this really scruffy dude on the stage saying, give us your money! And he wasn't a well-practiced orator. He didn't come up with a compelling message. There was a video, and we watched that video, and we knew we couldn't stand by and let that happen.
Yeah.
And so what he did was he is the embodiment of right now-ness, because now he is the world's leading expert on poverty, on global hunger. And he is the one who is the spokesperson for all these people who desperately need our help and our love. And he has tirelessly continued. And he's got really good at it now.
Yeah.
So now he is eloquent. He can speak with great knowledge on his subject. But could he at the beginning? He just knew he had to do something.
Yeah.
And so that is right nowness. That's absolutely, oh my goodness, is that the time I have to do this now?
Well, speaking of time, Tanya, we have been chatting for quite some time.
Oh my goodness.
You're sharing such wonderful stuff that, you know, this is absolutely fabulous. And I'm just wondering, as we try and wrap this up, is there any other kind of really great, you know, any tools or techniques or any insights that you could share with people that are just really, you know, it sounds like you've overcome so much. Is there anything you've not told us that you could squeeze in a few minutes and just get something else out for the Head Trash Show listeners?
Oh my darlings, I just want to send everyone all my love and all my support, because the one thing that I could share is the incredible happiness you will feel once you cross over that barrier of fear and anxiety, how amazing it is on the other side, and how keen I am to let you know that if I can do it, anyone can do it. And I'm just, you know, yes, there are all sorts of things, but you'd have to hook up with me.
So where can they do that then, Tanya?
Oh!
How can people find out where you are? Have you got online details that you can share, Twitter, website, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. Tweet me at Inspiring Tanya. Facebook me, Tanya Mann Rennick, and my website, where I will give you, when you go to my website, I have a free email that I will send you over 10 days, 109 ways to shine. And so far people have written to me and said, I can't believe you're giving this away. So go and grab it now, because I may take it offline soon. But if you go and do that, my web address is www.tanyamannrennick.com.
And that's M-A-N-N, isn't it, man?
Yeah. So it's TANYAMANRENNICK.
Wow. Well, I will have all those details on the show notes on the headtrash.co.uk website, where you can find this podcast episode. And you can then get yourself over to Tanya's website, get the email series. Even when she was telling me about this email series earlier, when you were telling me before we started recording, I was like, you've got to sell that, girl. You can't be giving this away for free. So I think she might well be putting a price on it quite soon. So get it while you can. So, well, thank you so much, Tanya, for joining me today on the Head Trash Show. It's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for tuning in. You've just been listening to Alexia Leachman here on The Head Trash Show. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to pop over to www.headtrash.co.uk to get your copy of the free 5 Steps to Clearing Head Trash guide. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes for more strategies, tips, and how-tos for clearing your head trash and reclaiming your headspace. Until next time.